get into Rock Under Fire mode now. What is Rock Under Fire mode?
That's
where we can say fuck.
Yeah, that's the... I don't have to apologize for saying fuck off. That's the unapologetic Pat.
This is where we play catch up.
Catch up? Catch I wanted up. Mustard.
Yeah, we haven't been around a lot since May.
What's up, fuckers?
We had, one episode all summer.
But
it is now football season.
But it was a good one.
Where was the beginning of baseball season last time we got together?
Wow.
Yeah.
And now it's the end of baseball season.
But we threw that little side project called RetroSpeak out at our audience and hopefully some new audience. So, yeah, we launched this thing called RetroSpeak, and it's all nostalgia stuff and looking back at all these different influential historical points of the second half of the 20th century. And it kind of takes us out of the obligation of having to talk about music all the time.
True. Our first episode was baseball, which was really cool.
Yeah. But, here we are back talking about music, and we just wanted to do this and just catch up. What's going on in music? You know, I have a rant, man.
I have a right rant. Off the bat. It's not a super tramp rant.
I think the last real Rock Under Fire rant, classic super tramp rant. I love super tramp. Pat can't stand them. But where do I begin, man? This is directed at blabbermouth.com. Net. Right, I didn't call them out by name in the last episode.
Dot
I
net.
Did. I put an episode out there the last time. It was kind of like a solo effort because I interviewed KK Downing from Judas Priest, and it was more about reviewing his book. So I put that out there on the Rock Under Fire podcast. Now, anybody that is hooked up to Blabbermouth in one way or another, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is, these guys are worse than TMZ. These guys are worse than the National Enquirer. I mean, yeah, they keep us informed as to what's going on, but as far as, there is nothing original about their content. Their content is basically taking interviews, man, and milking one interview for weeks at a time. Now, this is what they do, all right? And this is, and I'll get into the KK thing in a little bit, because this is why I am personally pissed off about this. Blabbermouth, their MO is, if you do an interview, okay, and you talk for a half hour and you issue a whole number of statements, Blabbermouth will take one sentence out of that they feel is controversial, and they'll write a headline out of that sentence, and they'll write an entire article based on that sentence. Okay, the next day they'll take another sentence, and they'll take the same article and they'll plug in the little bit about attributed to that one sentence, and then the rest of the article will be the same. So they do this every day with KK Downing. KK is on a promotional thing for his book. He's doing a lot of press and he's doing a lot of interviews. So he's out there doing a lot of interviews. And so what Blabbermouth is doing is they'll take one sentence, and then again, they make a headline out of it. And this is going on every day for months. You know, the back and forth between him and Halford and Ian Hill, and we discussed it on Rock Under Fire probably back last winter. Now, because he's doing this press for the book, all of his press is done in a number of days. He's got, one day he'll have a whole bunch of interviews, the next day he'll have a whole bunch of interviews, and that's it. You know, he did all of his press. So Blabbermouth takes one sentence from an interview, and again, they'll milk that interview for as much content as they get. Blabbermouth readers, and this doesn't apply to all of their boneheaded readers, but a lot of people out there, oh, come on, KK, enough with this. Come on, you left the band. There's something wrong with this guy here. Every day he's out there talking to Blabbermouth. KK is not out there every day whining about Judas Priest. KK said all this stuff in one fucking interview, okay? And Blabbermouth is taking that one fucking interview and writing dozens of fucking headlines out there, which you gullible asshats are out there fucking thinking that KK's complaining on a daily basis.
Your headline was one of the first.
And they did exactly what I said that they were going to do. And I said this to KK. And this is obviously was edited because I didn't want to out blabbermouth, but I said, now that you said that, when KK said, I can play Sinner better than Richie because I'm the originator, which is fine.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was the first one that popped.
Okay, I said to KK, I said, watch, blabbermouth's going to make a fucking headline out of that, and it's gonna start a whole shitstorm, okay? He just kind of laughed. I don't even know if I put that in the episode.
He might not even know who they are.
He knows. Yeah, he knows, yeah. He pays no mind to it.
They did it with Eddie Trunk this week too. They played a bunch of snippets.
Wrote
a bunch of snippets.
It's not the whole Judas Priest audience. Obviously, it's a small percentage. But this guy's taking a beating on blabbermouth with their readership. Mm. You know, they're out there trashing KK for something he said one day of his life, and blabbermouth hacks this thing up. For weeks.
Yeah, the comments are quite
to
comical.
Make it look like KK's out there complaining every day.
Right. You're 100% correct. I've read through some of those comments. I'm like, what are these fucking people, retarded?
Right.
I hate using that word, but yeah, I mean, I just remember one girl defending it. She's like, do you people even realize that this is like the same thing that's been going on and on and on? It's craziness.
I talked to Mark Eglinton. Mark Eglinton is the co-writer of KK Downing's book Heavy Duty: Days and Nights in Judas Priest, and you know, I totally failed to mention his name in the KK episode last time. And you know, these are just the unsung people that, you know, you forget sometimes that when a major rock artist has a book coming out, you forget sometimes that there is somebody that there's a co-writer with them, like the Ace Frehley book. I don't even know who the hell wrote that book with him, you know, but Mark Eglinton co-wrote the KK book. He reposted our episode.
Yeah, he promoted it. It was a good
thing. I've been talking to him here and there on Twitter. Very cool guy.
Is he from Scotland?
Yeah, and you know, he's been writing about metal for a very long time. He's got some books out there, For the Sake of Heaviness, The History of Metal Blade Records. Oh. I mean, he goes in these like untapped areas where books are needed, man.
Metal Blade. I'd like to read that about Metal Blade. Sure.
You know, So Let It Be Written, the biography of Metallica's James Hetfield. He's got another one, a couple Metallica books, The Wolf at Metallica's Door, quite a few others. But
with the James Hetfield,
I wanted
stuff,
to give a shout out to
yeah,
him.
Yeah, sure, absolutely, and deservedly so. The James Hetfield stuff, was Hetfield involved in those or no?
I don't know.
I'd be interested to know that.
I haven't gotten either of those books in my hand. These are the people behind the scenes that really, really make books happen. A lot of times, an artist may not even write one word that, you know, the co-writers like interview, getting all the information.
And you're a writer yourself. So you definitely know where it's coming from. It's coming from the heart, and it's heartfelt. And
yeah.
Hey man,
you know, like Ace Frehley, we know wasn't sitting at a typewriter.
No,
you know,
right, neither was KK.
A lot of
the
stuff was recounted to a co-writer.
Neither was KK,
you know?
For that matter. None of them were.
I don't know the process of KK's book. I don't know how they did it, but I would imagine that Mark did a lot of the bulk of the writing. I don't know, Mark. Correct me on that. I don't know who did what, but again, I am sure, I'm positive that you played a major role in this book, and you deserve the recognition like KK does. But anyway, what's going on, man? Like, what, you got anything to talk about?
Well, the obvious, the elephant in the room we got to do.
What is that?
The big K word. Kiss is doing a final tour.
Yeah, man. This
it's
is,
not really new news.
The end
but,
of the road.
Two Kiss fans sitting in a room. That's the elephant in the room.
Yeah, they trademarked the end of the road a few months back.
In horrible, horrible fashion, might I add.
Yeah.
Most of you out there know I have a young daughter. She's 14. Her and I watch, our guilty pleasure is watching The Voice and America's Got Talent and the one where they run around American Ninja Warrior. Those are our three shows that, like, reality shows that we watch. So Kiss comes out and opens up America's Got Talent with, was it Detroit Rock City? I can't even remember.
Yeah, Detroit
it was,
Rock
right?
City. Yeah.
It wasn't very good.
They're alive. They're healthy. They're here, you know. You see them or you don't, you know.
Fred Lynn or Jack Lynn, what the hell was that guy's name from that show? And I felt it was like them, and we're going to get that watered down version of it. It was just, I don't know, the spectacle. Maybe, what is it, Mike? What is it? The spectacle isn't there for me anymore.
I mean, you know my stance on this. I am 100% of the Eddie Trunk sentiment that I wouldn't mind if these guys weren't out there pretending to be Ace and Peter. And it's just an argument that I'm tired of making.
Sure.
If you're out there supporting the band, great, more power to you. I'm not saying that Kiss shouldn't be out there. It's just not for me. The only way I'll go see one last show, and we know it's going to end at the Garden. You know, they haven't confirmed that, but I mean, it's going to end at the Garden, and Ace will be on that stage, I assure you.
Yeah, he's already said it depends on how much they're going to pay him.
Yeah, well, he knows he's doing it either way.
Okay, so that being said, how far around the corner are we from four gentlemen dressing up as Kiss and going out and playing Kiss music better than Kiss?
I think we already are.
So we're there. This is going to be. This is just the starting point. It's the leaping point. The jumping off point. Two of the four are falsies.
I got off the bus after the first farewell tour. That's where Kiss ended for me.
I get that, but how far away are we from them leasing the name to four members, four people?
They've talked about doing that. Kiss, you know, which a lot of Kiss fans are calling Kiss 2.0.
So we're closer to that now than ever before.
I don't know that that's actually going to happen.
You don't think so?
I do.
I think it's going to happen. Like a Vegas run. Like that, the band that you introduced the Rock Under Fire listeners to, it sounds like the 77 Kiss or the 76 Kiss. What the heck was their
78
name?
Oh yeah, Classic 78.
Classic 78.
They would be the primary candidates
fantastic.
To record new music.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know about recording, but just going out and maybe playing a Vegas stint of 7 days, four guys who look and sound just like Kiss.
Yeah.
I mean, the looks, you know, behind the makeup, you can do really whatever you want.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to say that right off the bat because it's been, you know, I know you have a couple of things you wanted to address as well, but that's one right there is just, that was huge news when I heard it. I was like, wow, they're going to finally hang it up.
No, it's. I listen to a lot of Kiss podcasts. I listen to, at least four Kiss podcasts on a regular basis. And so we knew that they licensed the name End of the Road. We knew it was coming at some point. It's almost like Kiss fans are almost pushing for it at this point, that they're just trying to imagine what they're going to do, what they would do, when it's going to end. They say they've got 3 years coming up on this tour. Personally,
wow.
I don't see Paul Stanley going the distance of 3 years. You know, and it's
vocally,
not just his voice. It's not just his voice. What he said was right. These guys are lugging around 50, 60 pounds in gear. Just the costumes alone and the boots. And these guys are pushing their 70s, man. They're late 60s now, you know? And I mean, look, I'm just speaking for myself. I wish, what I would like to see as a fan is something that Kiss has never given us. They only hinted at it in Unplugged. And that was just a one-off thing, and it was a surprise where Ace and Peter came out. But what I would love to see at some point would just be the original four in no makeup. They've never done a concert without makeup.
That's interesting.
Get this thing out of the way. This is what I think that Kiss should do on End of the Road. Now, this is just my opinion. This is how I think they should end it. I think what they should do is do the tour. Get this tour out of the way. It'll go around the world, however long it takes. The current lineup, Eric Singer, Tommy Thayer, Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley. Go out there, say goodbye to this version of Kiss, or Kiss in general. Okay, do the bulk of like 99% of the tour. Get it out there, a year, 2 years, whatever it is, 2.5 years. Take a little break, okay, whether it be a month, 2 months, and then have like this little epilogue to like the final end of the tour where they do what the Grateful Dead did in 2015, where they did Fare Thee Well and they did like five shows in select
Chicago.
Cities.
They only did that Fare Thee Well was just in Chicago.
No, well, it was in California.
Oh, the tour,
too? They did a couple
of
shows out west.
They did the thing in Chicago like 4 nights or something.
Yeah,
like that,
they added a couple of shows out west. But I think what Kiss should do is where they get everybody on board, whether it be the original four, or probably most likely is get Bruce Kulick on board, you know, maybe get Vinnie Vincent back there if, you know, Paul could stomach doing that. Get, you know, just all living members and get them involved in some way where they have to, just one big blowout show in select cities like Detroit, obviously, L.A., somewhere in Australia.
New York, obviously.
And obviously end it in New York City, where they have a big Kiss blowout where everybody involved, and then it just whether they play in sets and everybody does, you know, something that's relevant to their era of Kiss. So, you know, Bruce Kulick would be doing stuff from the 80s, and, you know, Eric Singer would be out there for the majority of the show. I don't know how if Peter could handle an entire show, but Peter would obviously be out there to sing Hard Luck Woman and Beth. And then in the very end of the show, end it with the core four, with the original four, and just have these guys. But I just wish everybody would be, you know, Ace isn't going to be out there with Tommy Thayer wearing the makeup. So what I suggest that Kiss does, and if anybody in a Kiss podcast or Brandvold, if somehow you end up listening to this, which I doubt because I don't, you know, we're not a very wide-reaching podcast. We don't have a big audience. But what I think that Kiss should do is do the bulk of that tour, you know, the current lineup in makeup, but when it comes down to doing these final shows with everybody involved, if that's the way that they so choose to do it, I say no makeup. Nobody's in makeup. Just the people, these fucking souls that gave us this music and 40 plus years of music, just the people, the guys that gave us the music in the flesh, just them. Jeans, T-shirt, leather jacket, whatever it is. However cool they got to make themselves look on stage, but no makeup. Just the people that gave us the music, and make it all about the music.
It's funny you mentioned Unplugged, because, one, I loved it. I thought it was great. I have it on CD. But two, it came on in my car, because I have like a thumbstick with all of my music on it, and Nothing to Lose came on, and I was just ecstatic about it and blasted it riding down the road in the pickup, and I was... Like I said, it's just funny that you mentioned that in particular, because I loved it when they brought Peter and Ace out and they all jammed together. It was really cool. And that I don't know if I share your sentiment on the finality of that, but...
Do you have any ideas of how you think they should do it? I mean, because like the big thing to address is how are they... Like if and when all people involved or just the original guys, like how would they be incorporated into the tour or even some
I'm
shows?
I'm saying I'll stick by my guns. I kind of think saying that finish it where it started at the Garden, and if they could get Peter to do two songs, maybe even in the makeup and get Ace. But, you know, I mean, it's weird.
But what do you do with Tommy? What do you do with Tommy Thayer?
I know. It's weird with Tommy being dressed as Ace and then Ace being
there. They're not going to... I mean, Paul loves Tommy.
Maybe for 2 nights.
Now, I know Tommy might say, well, being a Kiss fan that he is,
sure.
And knowing, you know, he's almost become like the keeper of the Kiss.
The legacy.
The legacy. He knows that band better than Gene and Paul do. If he would be willing to step aside, you know, you wouldn't expect it, but Paul is not going to do, you know, what he did with Bruce Kulick saying, you know, we're going to go and do these shows with just the original guys.
Yeah.
Maybe they will. I think that that's what they should do. I can't see it happening.
I see like 2 nights at the Garden, something like that, finality of it. But
Maybe, man.
And I don't know. Who knows what's in store? Who knows?
But in that respect, that's why I think that they should do the end of the road tour, and again have this like little 5 to 10 show epilogue where it's like this like added on maybe a month or two later, where this is going to be the final end.
That's the most we've talked about Kiss on this podcast in a long time.
Yeah, it's like we kind of I wanted to get off Kiss for a while, but you know, this is definitely
important,
a valid reason,
and it was important
about.
To talk about
them. There was a little Nirvana reunion last night.
Yeah. I just read about that, too.
Chris Novoselic and Dave Grohl got together with Joan Jett and the guy from Deer Tick. I forgot the guy's name. I don't know Deer Tick. I can't say I'm not a fan because I don't know their music. A friend of mine is a really big Deer Tick fan. And they got together, and Pat Smear. And they did a bunch of songs somewhere in
I don't
California.
Remember where it was.
It was one of those. I don't know.
Didn't Joan play with them at the induction ceremony, right? Yeah. So, yeah. It's good to see that. You know, was it? I didn't even read the whole. I just saw the blurb. Was it a charitable thing or?
I don't even know. It was just, I just found this out about an hour or two ago, and I just kind of glanced at it. I mean, I gotta mention that.
I don't know. It was cool. It's cool to see something like that. But Nirvana was Kurt, really. You know, it's like Pearl Jam losing Eddie Vedder. I mean, bands have gone on with losing singers. You know, AC/DC being the obvious one.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Nobody's gonna sing that like Kurt. No, any of that material. It's still cool to see those guys get together, and it's cool to see that they're still friendly with each other, Dave and and Novacelic.
Yeah.
Or Novella, whatever he pronounced his last name.
Yeah, a lot of band. You know, like you almost feel bad for some of these bands. Like I get, like I can't. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about. Well, I know how I feel about Adam Lambert playing the role of Freddie Mercury, and like you know,
he's not even as good. There's a Queen cover band out there where their singer's better than Lambert. He's not even as good at it as this guy is.
See, it's like, you know, like nobody's going to replace Mercury, but no. I get why Queen is out there, you know, just celebrating the music and
keep it alive.
You know, these guys, these are good guys, man. Brian May.
And Brian May doesn't need to do it. Let's put that. He doesn't need to do it. The guy's a fucking astrophysicist.
Yeah.
For Christ's sake.
Because Freddie dies, it's just like Queen ends. It ended for a long time, and it was just kind of like, now what? You know, and that really sucks for any band.
Coming out too.
You know, for any band that big.
It does. It puts them in a spot. I mean, obviously, Freddie wasn't like a suicide or, you know, I mean, unfortunately, he was taken, you know, by disease. But it did put them in a spot. Like, okay, well, what do we do now? I agree with you 100%. You know, bands like even the current ones like Soundgarden and then Linkin Park, it puts them in a spot of like, where do we go from here now? Because they all still want to play. You know that.
Yeah.
Especially the guys from Soundgarden because I think they were still kind of relevant.
And, you know, it's not, you know, this guy's not trying to be Freddie Mercury.
No.
They're just out there celebrating the music. You know, I can't bring myself to go see it.
He's better than Paul Rogers was.
and then you have a case like Fleetwood Mac, wow, where, you know, there's this bullshit, like 50 years into their career now, they lose Lindsey Buckingham. And so they're out there, and apparently they're having a tough time selling tickets.
Lindsey's part of that show, man. When you go, you know, on our other podcast on RetroSpeak, we talked a little bit about Fleetwood Mac because they did an Unplugged for MTV. And watching that dude play guitar, very underrated guitar player, man. Mind-boggling watching that guy play guitar and sing the way he does. He's got still a tremendous voice, but he fingerpicks everything. He doesn't use a pick. He's just really watching that guy get around the guitar was just mind-blowing.
Which is interesting because when they said, okay, Lindsey's out of the band, and this is before Mike Campbell joined, you know, it was just kind of like, you know, he's out, he's in, he's out, he's in, you know, and then you went through that period in the 90s where, you know, you went through Behind the Mask, and then they did that album, I think it was called Time in 95 with Dave Mason. Fleetwood Mac has always been, you know, whoever Mick Fleetwood and John McVie are playing with.
It depends on who they're getting along with at the time, too, because it's been a turnstile of people just fucking hating each other. There's deep-rooted hatred through that fucking
group. Whether it be Bob Welch or Peter Green, or there's just so many different eras of the band, and the band is obviously, it's a different era now, and the set list, I was just kind of blown away by. I looked at the set list.
Oh, I did not.
It's obviously, you know, they're acknowledging their 50th anniversary on this tour.
It's got to be Stevie Nicks heavy, though, because, I mean, what else are they going
to
do?
She seems to have taken over the band. I don't know where, you know, but the interesting thing about this tour is I'm actually interested in this now. They've got Neil Finn and Mike Campbell. Now, Mike Campbell makes sense. When they said Mike Campbell, I was just like, yeah, man,
okay,
this makes sense.
Yeah, you can get on board.
He obviously, you know, his career was cut, the Heartbreakers were cut short because, you know, we lost Tom Petty a year ago this week. And but Neil Finn, you know, who goes back to, like, you know, Split Enz and Crowded House, and doing most of Lindsey's vocals and splitting the guitar solos with Mike Campbell, they obviously they're opening up with The Chain. And they get into Little Lies, and just like a big wall of hits in like the first four or five songs, you know, just a lot of the obvious ones are being played. And then they go into this period, like this, like the middle of the set, you know, five, six, seven, eight, nine songs in a row, where they pull out all of these like songs that haven't been played in 25, 30 years. Wow. Some of them 40 years.
Wow.
They're doing Black Magic Woman again.
Wow.
Stevie Nicks is singing that. There is a song, Tell Me All the Things You Do, Danny Kerwin. This is a song that goes back to like an album that they did called Kiln House in 1970. It's total rarity.
Wow.
You know?
So it's kind of like a double-edged sword with Lindsay not being there, and that they're, or if he was there, would they still be visiting this?
I think Stevie and Christine are kind of enjoying the fact that, you know, I mean, Stevie Nicks is doing a song called Storms off the Tusk album. It's just this song that was never, I don't think it was played live. I don't remember them ever playing it live. A song that was, there was the whole thing, like she got involved with, after she broke up with Lindsey Buckingham, you know, a couple of years had gone by, but she got involved with Mick Fleetwood for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and then him being married, and then he kind of left her for her friend, and yeah, it was this whole thing. From what I understand, Storms was written about that whole situation. And, you know, like my favorite Stevie Nicks songs off of Tusk have always been Storms and Sisters of the Moon. And, you know, she's done that song, but, you know, she pulled out Storms. Christine McVie's pulled out a song called Everywhere from Tango in the Night. And another one that I loved was Isn't It Midnight? Tango in the Night, I mean, Lindsay and Christine McVie carried that album. It wasn't really a great Stevie Nicks album, but they're pulling out all of these like rare songs.
Wow.
Which kind, they're doing that song, remember that split end song, I Got You?
Yeah.
They're doing that.
Holy shit.
They're doing Don't Dream It's Over from Crowded House. So it's kind of weird seeing Fleetwood Mac playing these songs, and they've got all these extra musicians on stage. So it's like, how do you feel about that? I don't know, you know, whatever it is to get by, well, whatever it is
hit.
To
play.
But it's
Happy
a
Birthday.
Very, very interesting set list that just kind of makes you very aware that, well, this isn't Fleetwood Mac trying to get by without Lindsay. It's just, if you think about the history of Fleetwood Mac, going back to Peter Green and John McVie, and it's always, I mean, Fleetwood Mac, think about the name, Fleetwood Mac. It's John McVie and Mick Fleetwood. Yeah. It's always been their band, even through the height of their popularity in terms of mainstream popularity, where it's been like, you know, where it was Lindsay and Stevie carrying the band through a couple of years.
They were just fantastic songwriters, which really, you know, Stevie and Lindsay, fantastic songwriters that helped elevate an already good band, I think. Yeah. But like you said, I agree 100%.
They just became a totally different band in that era.
It's been McVie's, Fleetwood's band the entire time.
Yeah, and it's
back to the 60s,
and now
right?
It's just like, it's the, I guess the way to just get through that whole Lindsay's not there is just realize that we're now in another era of Fleetwood Mac. It's just a different phase. And the fact that maybe, you know, maybe Stevie said, well, okay, Lindsay's gone. Now we can play all these songs that Lindsay said no to back in the day.
You know, that's the rumor that you hear all the time is that he's a real prick to work with as far as what they play. And so maybe you're right. It kind of takes the handcuffs off them a little bit to visit
like,
that.
Like after Rumors. Rumors was like one of the biggest albums in the 70s, right? How do you follow up Rumors, you know? And they did Tusk. A lot of people are really divided over that album, but that was Lindsay's project. That was like,
Lindsay's a fantastic writer.
He's a great writer. I love Lindsay Buckingham.
I love him a lot. I agree with you 100%. And like I said, I mean, watching that guy play, you're just fucking blown away by it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they pulled out a song called Hypnotized.
Oh, good song.
Like stuff from the 60s, man. Yeah. And like the songs that they haven't done in 40
Hypnotized
years,
has such
man.
A good groove to it, man. What a great song.
Yeah, I mean, Neil Finn is singing that song.
Really?
That song, Oh Well, Mike Campbell is doing the lead vocal.
Is there any footage, video footage of this out there yet? I have to search for that.
Probably very little. I mean,
I'd love to hear him sing Hypnotized.
I think 4 days ago was the first show. I think they played their second show last night, so I think I should probably YouTube some of that stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out. I'd like to see him singing Hypnotized.
So that's happening. What else is happening? We don't have any
major deaths to discuss. That's a good thing, I guess, right?
Yeah, I guess people stopped dying for a while. That's a good thing.
Yeah. It is. We had the Greta Van Fleet episode, and they have since put out their album.
They've got their first album, their first like proper album.
It's out now, right? I got to say this. I saw them on Fallon. I didn't like it.
I don't like the new song.
I thought it was horrible. I don't know. There was just something about it that annoyed me. I don't know what it was. And it's a shame because they were tearing things up a little bit. And I mean, I don't know. You're not really hearing too much.
Yeah, it's just one. It's well, I mean, it's one song that I heard. I can't say like. I mean, I haven't heard the album.
True.
But it's, you know, again, I don't. I'm not out there saying, you know, they're the greatest thing on the planet.
I don't. I
think they just give hope. Our whole gist of what we were saying in that episode that we did on Greta Van Fleet was that they seem to be the band that could possibly start like where a whole rock music movement is formed around, kind of like the way it was formed around Nirvana and Pearl Jam in the 90s. And unfortunately, the industry has to make this happen, man. You know,
I don't see it happening anytime soon.
This is
September right now, or October.
I see it happening.
Here, I'm going to tell you why. This is October right now. The season premiere of Saturday Night Live, which I still kind of say is, I think, a little bit relevant for new artists and such, for their musical guests. First 2 weeks of Saturday Night Live, week one was Kanye West, who was absolutely fucking horrible. He came out dressed up like a goddamn water bottle. I don't even know what the fuck was going on. I was ready to shoot my fucking television with a pistol. The second week, I don't even know who the fucking guy was. Another rap artist, though. I don't even know who the fuck the guy is. I don't even remember his name. It's irrelevant to me. However, Paul Simon is coming on, I think, next week or the week after, which I think is really cool because he's closing out. Obviously, he's not touring anymore and closing everything out. And I think it's a real cool full circle for him to do that, actually.
Yeah.
So where is the rock music? And Kanye, here's the other thing. Kanye played 3 fucking songs. There's only a select amount of people who have ever played 3 songs on Saturday Night Live. Bruce, Paul McCartney, Pearl Jam has done it. There's a limited amount of musicians that have gotten to do 3 songs on Saturday Night Live, and now Kanye is one of them. Everybody who knows me knows I can't stand that fucking guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But the ones that are in pop music right now. They're popular. It's all over the place, and rock is just trying to fight its way in. It's not a racial thing because I know plenty of people of color who love rock and roll, and I'm a white guy who likes rap. So it's not a color issue or a cultural issue. I just don't know what it is.
I can't really speak about it. I mean, rap, I'm like below rap 101. You know, rap for me begins with Grandmaster Flash and ends with Tribe Called Quest. I really don't care for anything on the West Coast, man. For me, rap is Public Enemy, Grandmaster Flash, Tribe Called Quest, man. And that's rap for me. So you know, it ends for me, it ends in 1991, man. You know,
well, Tribe Called Quest just put out another record a few years ago already. It's really good.
Whatever the second Tribe Called Quest, the Tribe album.
Yeah.
The Midnight Marauders or something like that, or Midnight something, man.
But rock is just, they're fighting to try and find their way, man. I mean, what's good on the rock charts right now? I guess Ghost, charted. There is still, believe it or not, I was surprised to understand, because Ghost charted, there was something on Blabbermouth talking about Ghost charting.
Well, again, yeah, Ghost is the other one. There's Ghost and Greta Van Fleet. So, I mean, what's going to get rock big enough that rock is going to be headlining arenas again to the point where, you know, these small bands aren't totally dependent on festivals?
And we have to be quite careful there because a new band headlining arenas, because the Maidens... Maiden sold out an arena.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're talking about new bands. That's what we're talking about. It's about new music and the industry catching on to the fact that people are interested, people are hungry for rock, and people will buy rock and pay money for rock, and that there is something viable in a future for rock and roll in the mainstream. You know, I mean, look, mainstream is a dreaded word for so many people. I get that. It's not even about being cool or hip anymore, man. It's not even about like how fucking cool you are because you like a band that only 10 people know about.
You have hip hop leeching its way into fucking country music now.
I'm interested in rock and roll having an effect on the overall totality of pop culture. That's what I'm interested in. And that's always been the underlying thread that kind of goes through our podcast. So I would like to see something form where, I mean, there are enough bands out there that are connected to the core of what makes great rock music, not just imitators. Greta Van Fleet isn't out there trying to imitate Zeppelin. They sound like Zeppelin because they understand Zeppelin. They get it. They're a different caliber. They're a different type of musician. I mean, these are kids. They sound like Zeppelin because they understand Zeppelin.
The world better hope that nothing ever happens to Dave Grohl. That's all I got
because
to say.
Because kids that age are sound. Most of them sound like Justin Bieber, you know, and they're doing that whole thing. So I would rather kids be listening to stuff that sounds like Greta Van Fleet.
Oh, yeah, hell, obviously. And then there's this, you know, I'm taking my kid to see Panic at the Disco. There's this whole movement. It's all girls screaming for the guy because he's a, you know, he's kind of good looking guy, and I don't even know how to label that. It's rock. It's got like some rock element to it, and I had a good time. I took her once already to see them, and we're going again in January to see them. I just don't even know how to label it. Is it a rock band? Is it an emo type thing? Because you know, it's her influence. Her influence obviously is me musically, but what she's listening to is. She could listen to Fleetwood Mac one day. I swear to God, Fleetwood Mac one day. And let's turn around and have Panic on. She has My Chemical Romance on. So she's all over the place, which is cool. Yeah. But she knows these rap stars.
Yeah.
Because I asked her on a Saturday Night Live thing. I was like, who the hell is that guy? And she rambled off his name right away. I'm like, what the fuck? How the hell do you even know? I read about him in a paper because fucking a guy got shot last night in Queens and everybody's going to be rest in peace, rest in peace, rest in peace. It's much like rock and roll. If you get into the rock and roll lifestyle, it was always booze and drugs.
Well, it's like, how do you know this guy's name? You know, because we're now in our late 40s and we're doing what our parents did is, you know, like, how do you know these guys? And like, you know, it was like we were memorizing this, the sequence of songwriting orders of albums.
I don't do it in the way that our parents did, though.
Yeah.
Our parents kind of were like, I don't know about that. Maybe that's a little... I mean, I'll listen to what she's listening to just so I know that, okay, it's kind of safe.
But every kid knew every Iron Maiden song. Every kid knew every Judas Priest song. Every kid knew every Led Zeppelin song. The point is that every kid knows all these rap songs because rap is the mainstream. Rap took over where rock used to be the center of pop culture. It was the zeitgeist. And again, I sound like a broken record on this podcast because that is the core thread that goes through our show. It's the reason for our show. I'm trying to be optimistic at this point because bands like Ghost exist, because bands like Ghost are so popular. There's a reason for it. There's a difference in the quality of the music. There's like an authenticity to Ghost that it doesn't sound like where, what's that band, Steel something, that
Steel
basically
Panther.
Tries to sound like they try to mimic the sound of the 80s.
Steel Panther.
But it's kind of disingenuous in a way because it's done on purpose.
And it kinda,
I think Ghost.
I think Steel Panther.
It's authentic because it's
absolutely 100%
his soul, man.
But the Steel Panther thing, it's almost like a fucking farce.
It is.
Almost after like making fun of the whole 80s scene.
Yeah.
And people
and
are fucking
that other band, The Darkness, it was the same thing.
It's fucking stupid. Don't do that. You're a fucking joke.
And you know, for bands like Panic at the Disco and My Chemical Romance, they came out. You know, I don't know. I don't know what that is. If it's emo or whatever it is, but they came in that point. They belong to that one decade of where rock kind of disappeared. Where it's coming off of this. You know, there was that little cluster in the early 2000s where it was the Hives and the Strokes and the Vines and the White Stripes, and only two of those bands really became big, and nobody really gives a crap about either of them anymore because Jack White is doing his own thing now, you know, that the White Stripes have almost become this, like, footnote to the early 2000s, and so have the Strokes.
Maybe Jack White is one of the guys that helped save
one of the most relevant rock musicians out there.
Maybe
right
he's
now.
One of the guys that helped save it. I don't know. He's off doing like some country stuff too. Big time producer. He's been to producing records again.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he is one of the guys. And you know, hey, again, you could go to a club and see a good rock band.
Yeah.
But I want to go, like you said, I want to go to a fucking arena and pay for, you know, shell out the $65 to go see an arena act. That's relevant.
And again, like the, you know, arena rock, quote unquote, is a curse word to a lot of people. But if you think about it, arena rock,
bullshit.
I mean, all of these bands in the 70s and 80s and first half of the 90s were playing arenas because there were just that many people listening to it. There were a lot of people listening to it. The bands can't sell out arenas now because there is just not that many people listening to them. And that's why they play the clubs, and that's why they get on the festivals. Festivals are good for those bands because it's the only huge audiences that they're going to play to ever.
I do enjoy going to a club and seeing an opening act. I'm like, oh wow, those guys are really good.
And if they were from Texas. Headliners of the festivals, if you always, it's usually somebody in their 50s or 60s, somebody that's been around for the past 30, 40 years. So that says everything. So I mean, if we have to look at the future of rock and roll in terms of the mainstream, yeah, there's lots of great bands out there. You just got to go look for it. Yeah. Well, again. I'm talking about rock and roll as just the center of everything. And again, it could be. It could very well be. You know, the last time it was, it held that position was during grunge.
You shouldn't have to look that hard, though.
You shouldn't have to look that hard. People aren't looking that hard for rap.
They're not looking that hard for country. Right, and that record should come out and slap you in the face and be like, holy shit, what is this?
But they got to start signing rock artists, man. Or maybe they don't. Maybe Dee Snider's right in the sense that the industry needs to die before it can be saved. Artists are their own record label. You can record a really good album in your basement or in your bedroom.
True.
You know, everybody serves as their own record label. So maybe
these current
labels need to be cut out altogether. But then again, where is the financial backing that would support a band to get heard on a mass level? It's like our podcast. We have zero promotional budget, right? You always need somebody with a lot of money that's going to get you to the masses. And that's the problem with Rock Under Fire and things like, you know, stuff like anybody could do a podcast, you know, and there's you and me that we do this every other week because we love doing it. But what I would love is to reach as many people as we can, and we have zero promotional budget.
Bring them into the conversation.
Right. So, yeah. It's the same thing, you know, in a way that, you know, you need those labels. You know, you need the industry to cultivate a situation where rock bands are viable again, man, and the rock music can exist on a massive level again.
Yeah, but all they care about is money. And making money. And right now...
And again, right now, you need bands like Greta Van Fleet and Ghost to prove, like, holy shit.
There is still a market for it. Right. It can still happen. Right. Okay, I agree with that. Because right now, all they see is dollar signs in fucking Diddy and Kanye and this one and that one. I can't remember it because I don't like rap. Well, I don't like where rap is right now. I can't stand where rap is.
Here's the good news. Rock music has about 25 years on rap. Right. Rock goes back easily. To, you know, 54 if you have to pinpoint, you know, the exact.
Yeah.
Right. So let's say 1954.
And hip hop is probably early 70s.
Right. So if in terms of the progression and the entire arc or trajectory of rock as an informative medium and the center of everything goes from about 54 to about 94. And you could go, you know, further, but. Let's say that. Like, so if rap is rock, rap is now in the early 90s. Like, rap is about to go into its grunge period. So if the good news is at some point, it will fizzle out, and the zeitgeist is going to change. It always does.
Well, what's scary about that is if you look at it like it's technology, the telephone wasn't invented that long ago, if you really look sit down and think about it, and it's obsolete. I know maybe three people with a fucking telephone in their house. Everybody's either on their cell phone or on the internet.
Right.
Telephone is fucking good. The cable companies throw it in because they don't even care because they can just go over the cable wire with your telephone service. It's nothing to them.
And there's so always going to be
What worries me, though, is that the telephone's not coming back. Nobody's going to fucking say, oh, let me get another wall phone and put it on my wall with a fucking 19-foot fucking cord and I can go into the other room and talk to someone. That's not happening.
Unless you're RetroSpeak posting pictures of telephones.
Yeah, but that's not happening anytime soon. So that kind of fucking worries me. I mean, okay, rock was dead. I mean, is somebody going to eventually put their fucking foot on the throat of rock and roll and be done with it? You know, who knows?
It'll always be.
Maybe when Keith Richards dies, it's over.
I mean, rock has never ceased to exist at any point in the last, since the 50s, right? There's always been rock music out there, but it's the industry at some point, they're going to realize that rap has run its course in terms of the same way that rock ran its course. it's basically where rock was in the 90s, the early 90s.
It's a very interesting point.
And again, that's just the lifespan of these things as being a cultural entity. Rap is still it. But
I don't see any very fucking
quickly,
slowdown.
Rock in the course of a decade from the end of the height of grunge right up until where the Strokes fizzled out, rock disappeared very quickly. That said, rock didn't disappear. It was still being made. It was just as far as like the industry pushing it.
Kind of gave up on it a little
and
bit.
And sticking it in kids' faces and saying, this is what you have to choose from now. So kids don't have a lot of music to listen to, but what's out there, none of it is rock. So it's like, okay, you have this, and this. It's all country and rap, but this is what you have to choose from, right? And pop, whatever, Justin Bieber, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Katy Perry and that type of music, right? So that's what kids are listening to because that's what's placed in front of them. Most kids that are 13, 14 years old aren't digging for those places where you go find rock music. You know, they're not looking for rock music because they don't know about it and they're not informed enough. Like, well, you just got to look for it.
And that's another great point because you can't throw that line out there, you got to go look for it, because a 14
they're listening to the top 10.
A 14 year old kid's not going to go out looking for rock music. They're just not going to. You and I can go out and look for rock music, but like I said before, rock needs to fucking slap you in the face, much like a hip-hop
record. I mean, you just find it on your phone now, so
so I mean, but you need something that's just going to come out and punch you right in the gut and you're like, holy shit, what was that? Let's look into that further.
Right, so let's look into that. That's our episode, I guess.
It was good doing a Rock Under Fire episode.
Coming up on, I think, the next episode, I talked to Nina Blackwood. One of MTV's original VJs, and it went up on our RetroSpeak second episode. And I diced up a lot of that interview because we went off in different directions. And I wanted to keep it to the topic of MTV. So what you hear on RetroSpeak is kind of an abbreviated version of that conversation. So I think the next episode of Rock Under Fire, we're going to play that whole No Holds Barred conversation.
Nice.
In its entirety. And then we've got our big 50th episode coming up at some point. So I don't know what that's going to be yet, but...
We'll
It'll
think of
cool.
something, I'm sure. And we're going to have we're going to have another Christmas episode this year, I hope, right?
It may very well be our Christmas episode. I don't know. A lot coming up. Rock Under Fire isn't going anywhere. We're alive and well, folks. We're just splitting, we're doing two podcasts right now for a while. We've got this thing called RetroSpeak. Look into it. It's nostalgia and a lot of old fun stuff. So
we got a cool episode, not only the Nina Blackwood, but you and I discussed what episode 3 is potentially going to be for RetroSpeak, and I'm looking forward to that.
Well, yeah, I think...
I don't know if you want to let the cat out of the bag about it or not, but...
Oh, yeah. No. I was just saying by the time this episode of Rock Under Fire airs, will that third episode have already... taken place, but it wouldn't have. This is going out before
before that third one.
So yeah, we're kind of juggling podcasts right now, and it's all good. It's all good, folks. Hit subscribe on everything. Hit subscribe on Rock Under Fire. Hit subscribe on RetroSpeak. We're on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review.
And if you see us drinking in a bar, buy us a beer.
Buy us a beer.
We like beer, and we'll buy you one back.
Yeah. Pouring on me, bad news keep pouring on me.